This is Matt Wells at UN News. Amid rising numbers of COVID-19 infections and deaths, the World Health Organization, WHO, stressed on Friday that the solution to beating the pandemic lies in having clean hands, more than hopes for a speedy vaccine. That's not so easy in countries with poor access to clean water, as WHO's Dr. Margaret Harris tells UN News' Daniel Johnson before providing an update on the human drug and crucial vaccine trials now underway. For those listeners worried about a beloved family animal, Dr. Harris also addresses concerns about human-to-pet transmission of the new coronavirus.
So what we're worried about today are the very, very large outbreaks we're seeing in a lot of different countries around the world, because they are putting enormous pressure on health systems. So that means that you've got health workers under extraordinary pressure, pressure we haven't seen in any time in our lifetime. And we're seeing too many health workers getting infected and sadly far too many health workers dying.
Yes, and not just in the least developed countries, it's in the so-called richer countries. So what I'm really worried about too is the countries in Africa that seem to be just starting to get it. So I was talking to somebody from the International Organization for Migration the other day, and in Mozambique, they had a couple of cases. Now, if what we've seen previously is anything to go by, those cases are going to increase, and then explode. So what has the World Health Organization done to help these poorer countries? I know you talked about helping preparedness back in January.
So that's exactly what has been going on right back very, very early on when we saw that this was going to be a problem for many countries if it started to spread around the world. We identified 40 countries that had particularly fragile health systems and needed a lot of support. And we went to those countries and helped them organize themselves with protective equipment, with training of staff, with planning for where they would isolate people, how they would quarantine people, how would they do testing, all those things. And we organized massive amounts of training in the African Regional Office, for instance, of different people in the health system so that they were ready and were planning very, very early on. As you say, we haven't yet seen those explosions of cases that we've seen in Europe and the US and China and Asia, but we were preparing those countries for that. And it's not going to be easy, especially the hand washing. Africa has got very low levels of potable water supplies in many countries. You know, we talk about 60% of people not having access to clean running water. So provision of water, as has happened with, for instance, when there's Ebola, not just WHO, but UNICEF has come in very much to ensure that people have access to water and access to the ability to wash your hands and perform all the things needed, all the hygiene precautions needed to protect themselves from this.
Do we know any more about why the coronavirus is so easily spread? Are there any indications that it may disappear when the weather starts to warm up? What are the measures that people really should be taking heed of right now? We know about washing hands, but what can you tell us about the latest science on transmission?
The latest science on transmission is we know it does pass very easily from person to person. It's likely that one person infected will infect at least three other people. So that's why you see that slow rise, you know, one person, three people, that looks like small numbers, that's just four. But then three people infecting another three people, the numbers start to go up. And once you get to a certain point, they go up exponentially. And that is what we are seeing in Europe and the US and other parts of the world right now. We also know that it's transmitted via droplets. That is, droplets, it mostly colonizes your nose and the back of your mouth. And if you even speak, like I'm speaking now, we all spray a bit when we speak. But also if you cough, and this causes a dry hacking cough, people can't control a cough, it just won't stop. So if people are coughing, again, those droplets will land on surfaces. So this gives you two hints. One, if your hands touch the surface and then it touches your mouth, nose or eyes, it will get into your body. So therefore, you must keep your hand pristine. Whenever you've touched surfaces that a lot of people touch, like doorknobs, like banister rails, like seats and so on in public transport, if you've touched those things, wash your hands afterwards, and especially wash your hands before you put them anywhere near your mouth, nose and eyes. The other thing we know is it binds to the cells in the gut. So it can pass through the feces. So when you use the bathroom, it is a possibility that any of those surfaces as well could have virus. Now, it's always a good idea anyway. It's essential after you've used the bathroom to wash your hands, but wash your hands doubly well. Sing Happy Birthday twice or any of the more interesting songs that are around. And again, never, never, never put your finger, your hand in your mouth, nose or eyes unless you have just washed it.
Right, that is good advice. And what's the latest science on transmission between pets and people? Because this virus came from animals in the first place.
So it certainly didn't come from pets. It did come from the animal kingdom. We know that it started in a species of bat, and this species of bat is, coronaviruses love this particular bat. Bats seem to be very popular with viruses generally. So we know it started in this species of bat. It doesn't cause any harm in the bat. It just sits there in its body. But that's where it likes to live. It's what we call a reservoir. But then because humans and bats aren't that close very often, we think there was an intermediate host. We've been looking for the host. Some people suggested it was the pangolin, which is a Chinese anteater, but that seems not to be the culprit in this case. So we have not found the intermediate animal. We have been looking at pets, and there is no evidence that pets are transmitting it to humans, but there is some evidence, some observational evidence, by which I mean a few cases, of humans transmitting it back to animals. So do be careful for your pet's sake. Just like we're socially distancing ourselves, when you look after your pet, ensure that you don't touch your pet without a washed hand. And after you've played with your pet or fed him or whatever, wash your hands thoroughly.
Fantastic advice. Thank you again, Margaret. So maybe you could give us an update too on the latest on a vaccine. Is it still a long way off?
It's still a long way off because of the human safety trials that are absolutely necessary to ensure that when the vaccine or the vaccines, there are 20 candidates, more than 20 candidates being developed right now, when those vaccines are ready, we need to know that we give them to people, and when we give them to people, they do not have serious side effects, because the first rule is always do no harm. A vaccine is something you give to a healthy person. You don't give it to a sick person. So you do not want to give something that will make a healthy person unwell. The second thing is we need to know what's called the immunological profile. So in the laboratory studies, you can see, yes, it blocks the virus. But in a person's body, we are really complex creatures. Does it raise the level of antibodies that will stop the virus? And do those antibodies stay up? You know, do they keep on doing the job? So with different vaccines, you find they can stimulate antibodies for a while, and then the antibodies go. That's why with some vaccines, you might have to have a booster to keep the antibodies up. So all those questions are still questions we don't know. But the good news is human trials have started, so that work is beginning. But we cannot expect the vaccine to be the answer. The answer to finishing this outbreak lies in our hands.
Right. And those are vaccine trials as opposed to drug trials. What can you tell us about the drug trials taking place, and when will we know about results?
So the drug trials, we will have information more quickly, judging by what I've seen with previous drug trials done during emergency periods. So what's been, again, very exciting also with the vaccines is that the scientists all came together very early in this outbreak. Back in late January, early February, they were all working flat out already and collaborating fantastically. The exciting thing also is that the genome was identified early in January and published. So it was put on the web by the Chinese scientists who identified it for all to see, all to share. That's why we already have tests. And that's actually why we know where it is. And that's how we can stop the virus if we're testing. So on the trials, at the same time when the scientists all got together, they decided, yes, we need to have a consistent way of studying the potential therapy so we really understand if they truly work. Because the problem is, you get a few people getting some treatment and they seem to do quite well, but you don't know if it just happened to be that they got good care or that they were stronger people. You don't really know if it was the drug or other things that made them get better. So what's happening now is that five different potential candidates are being tested against each other. So if you went into hospital today with coronavirus, you might be asked, will you be on the trial? There are various ones. The one that WHO is running is called the Solidarity Trial. You would be asked, okay, are you willing to be on this trial? And if you said yes, you wouldn't be told what medicine you're getting, and your doctors or nurses wouldn't be told exactly what medicine you'd be getting. They'd give a number, and that means you'd get medicine A. And if I got sick and I signed up, and I went in, I might be given medicine B, and so on. So they have forearms that test these medicines, and then they look at how well people are doing, and they give the same other kind of treatment. So if you do much better than I do, and lots of people like you do much better than I do, that gives us a sense that medicine A is more effective. And because so many people are sick, starting the trial now means that we should be able to have that information relatively quickly. And that means also that we would then stop the trial and say, okay, medicine A is the one that's really helping people more, so we should all use medicine A now. And we did exactly that during Ebola.
And talking about Ebola, maybe you could give us a quick update on that. We've pretty much seen the back of it after it started last August. But how are communities recovering now in Eastern DRC?
You're quite right. We've got to a very positive stage with the Ebola outbreak in Eastern DRC after a very, very long struggle that was particularly difficult because the virus moved from community to community in people over a very large geography, and many of the communities were very difficult to access, both geographically, physically, but also because there were terrible, terrible ongoing conflicts where people were at risk of being murdered every night from various insurgent groups. Anyway, that has come to an end, we hope. We're what's known as doing the countdown now. The last person to be confirmed with Ebola was confirmed negative almost 6 weeks ago. And if there are no more cases confirmed by April 12, we will consider that transmission has been completely interrupted. However, the DRC is now experiencing COVID. There are cases on the eastern side of the DRC in the areas where Ebola occurred. So the good news is they've actually got a very strong system now for responding to an outbreak because of Ebola. The bad news is, of course, it's terrible to go from one outbreak to another.
And of course, DRC is also struggling with a measles outbreak too. And I guess my last question to you, what's the fear that COVID is actually really disrupting the help given to really vulnerable people all over the world? Or is it seen as an opportunity in some sort of perverse way?
Certainly. One of the positives is because there is the UN system and because it is geared to helping people in the worst circumstances, in some ways there are crisis and emergency systems better able to look after the most vulnerable than there are in the richest countries. The richest and most developed countries are used to dealing with these things themselves. And, you know, great outbreaks and terrible catastrophes are things that happen elsewhere to people in much more resource-poor and difficult countries. This is how it has seemed to be for many people. So for many people in very developed countries, they're experiencing a shocking sense of helplessness. Whereas I've often felt that with many of the countries we work in, they're better geared to dealing with an outbreak. The communities have a better sense of what it takes to overcome an outbreak. So I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I think in some ways, mentally, psychologically, communities may deal with it better.
Very final question to you, Margaret. I was very interested in the infodemic concerns that the World Health Organization had initially when this virus broke out in December. We started to see lots of quack theories online, and the World Health Organization has done a lot to dispel some of these myths. Are we seeing really these myths trailing off now, or are you still seeing some crazy theories coming along, like, you know, viruses come from space and that kind of thing?
Unfortunately, no. We are certainly fighting that war on and it really is a communications war. Unfortunately, the misinformation keeps being circulated, very, very negative things being said about, sometimes being driven by political interests as well, which is really very distressing to see. But yeah, there are a lot of myths. I can understand some of them. You know, I heard one of them where people were saying, oh, drink hot water. And I can see what they're thinking, that you just sort of flush the virus out. The virus attaches to your cells. It gets in there and gets into your cells. So it's not just sitting there like sort of muck in your nose or your throat. It's in your cells. So drinking anything isn't going to flush it out. What we need is to prevent it from coming out of your nose into somebody else's body. But also, if it is in your nose, build up your immunity. Do all the things that strengthen your immunity. Eat the fresh food, avoid the smoking, drink less alcohol. And I know it's difficult because we're all in lockdown, but find ways to exercise and also find ways to be happy. Connect with people you love, play music, read a good book, as President Macron said. do the things that you've been wanting to do for so long. Now is the time to do it.